quarter than our man Wild Bill. He was Cupid earlier this year. It's got to be distracting shooting free throws.
What's going on? You got me, your boy, Wild Bill, and you got my dude.
I'm already about to say it. Sup, dude?
Sup, dude? It was funny. We got an email the other day.
He didn't even say my name. He just calls me his dude because I'm like, sup, dude?
Sup, dude? We got an email the other day that said, sup, dudes?
Oh, I loved it. It made me laugh. I was so excited to respond back
and say, sup, dude?
Yeah, Larry, thanks for the email. It was awesome.
Yeah, I actually went to high school with Larry.
Oh,
yeah,
that's cool.
I think he was a little bit younger than me, but a really good guy. Smart guy. Got his doctorate and everything. So
cool.
Thanks for the feedback.
Yeah, it was good.
Sup, dude? Thanks for everybody's feedback. So we kind of got a little different episode for you today. Switching gears. We actually have in studio with us a special guest.
A very probably the specialist of guests for Bill.
My most special guest. we have my wife, Cammie Butler Sproat.
Hi.
Hi, Cammie. Thanks for being here.
Thanks. Thanks for letting me on here.
Letting you? It's true. We could get in trouble. We won't talk about that.
She's the one and only that I'll ever have on here.
Fair.
Down south. If you don't know what I'm talking about, I'm not saying it out loud.
You should have heard by now. It's been on a few episodes, right?
Yeah. So.
Multiple.
We'll avoid it this time.
Yeah.
Yeah, we actually had a little tiff this weekend about that school down south.
We don't need to go into it.
Can I tell the story?
If you want to.
We went to the lake.
Mm-hmm.
And we set up our tent, our shade tent, just a regular old white shade tent.
Right.
And then my brother-in-law and sister-in-law came, and we needed another shade tent. So they set up a shade tent that had that school down south logo on it. So we had those two shade tents, mm-hmm. and then about 20 yards away, we had a pavilion. Asked me if I ever went down to that shade tent.
Say how I would have done the same thing. I don't even know what to say.
Yeah.
It literally was kind of a sore subject.
I've had Ubers where, okay, this has happened one time, but I had an Uber pull up that had a sticker on it that looked like, you know, a certain letter of the alphabet.
Yeah.
And I declined. I was like, oh, I'm not the guy you're looking for. And like, no, I'm not joking. I did that one time because I just have a hard time.
I understand it's ridiculous. Like, what's that shade going to do to me? Like, all right.
Burn your skin.
Yeah. And like, all of my wife's family are very avid that school's fans. And
generations, like three generations.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, that's a big part of my wife's life, which I'm fine with. You know, and we even went down to the creamery down there. Not as good as Aggie ice cream.
Shocked you said that on the air.
I said the creamery.
That's what it's called.
In his defense, my sister lives in Provo. So no, he was being a supportive husband.
No, it's good. You got to have that balance, right? Yeah.
But yeah, we won't get too much further into that.
Yeah.
But no, Cammie, my wife, is here for a special reason.
Well, before that, can I clear my name?
Yeah, go ahead. Oh, yeah, get him. Get him, babe, get him.
Oh, my goodness. Are we doing this? This is the whole reason you're doing this episode?
Yeah. No. I'm going to roast you on air.
I thought so.
Because you've roasted me a couple times.
No, I haven't. You're taking it wrong. I think
so. I'm just clearing it up for everyone that I'm not a gold digger. The Nevada game when I was
collecting money.
You said I was just whoring Bill out. That is.
I think you might have said the F word too. And you yelled at my wife. It was
really cool. Oh, please. None of this is true.
No.
She was just worried that people might get that perception because I did say, like, yeah, she was just out there, like, fully supporting it. Like,
no, you're like, how much are you going to do? How much are you going to do?
Yeah.
How much are you
going to do? That all happened.
And really, it's because Bill walked away. Right. And so I was like, well, you can send me the money.
Yeah. And that's where everyone was like, all right.
Guys,
and,
you learn that I don't communicate well. I get an idea. I just go for it.
I think at that point, he was pretty nervous. He realized it was about to happen.
Yeah, I was crapping my pants. It was scary.
It was. I mean, for you, I know now I know that it's scary. Yeah, it was but scary, at the time, actually. I was like, why is he even worried about it? He's done this a million times.
That plays in to the episode we're getting into today.
True.
So, anything else, babe?
No, we're good.
Okay.
As long as you guys all know I'm not a gold digger. I just was being a supportive wife.
No, she's not. She's a sugar mama.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I love it.
It's actually kind of a pretty deep topic I want to talk about today. September, as this is going to air on September 2nd.
Correct.
September, let me pull up the verbiage they use. It's a national Suicide Prevention Month. And I know that we have talked previously about my personal battle with depression and anxiety, and we've even touched into yours.
Correct.
With the Jalen Moore episode, I know it was brought up with his. We've had some pretty good reach out about that. It's been really cool.
Yep.
I know Jalen's done a lot of outreach, and it's been awesome. But actually, my wife is here because I have struggled with depression, and I've had some suicidal thoughts and attempts. Not sure if it's quite attempts, but I'll get into those stories here. But my wife's here because she's my rock. You know, she's very strong, and you know, even if she doesn't say much, I just need her here.
Absolutely.
It's a pretty deep episode. In fact, I've done a podcast with a friend. He has a podcast. It's called Optimal You. And I did an episode with him for Men's Health, and I get into it. But, you know, I figure we have a podcast.
Yeah.
And I have a platform I can use, and I'd like to do it. So.
Fully support it.
We were talking a little bit beforehand just about, you know, there's lots of statistics out there for you. You guys can go look it up. Get educated on it. Know what you can do to help people. And as I get into my stories, you might not know who you're helping or how you're helping or somebody's struggling.
Absolutely.
Anything else before I just kind of get into it?
Nope. I think that's good. I mean, I just want to reiterate, we're not experts on the field by any means. Yeah, there's a lot of talk in the news currently because they're trying to, you know, have a new hotline so that you don't have to try to remember the whole 800 number, but they're trying to make it so you can dial a 3-digit number to get a hold of, you know, a mental health specialist if you need help, not just with suicide. It can be any kind of mental illness, you know, PTSD, anxiety, anything from a panic attack to, you know, fully suicidal thoughts. So keep that in mind. We'll share, obviously, on our platforms, 800 number, the website, and all of that as well. But for any statistics or any way you want to help, obviously, Google it. That's kind of what we did to prepare for this. And so there's a lot of information out there.
In my work, 1-800-CONTACTS, I work at 1-800-CONTACTS, they actually have been really pushing a lot of this, and we're having a thing on Tuesday at work, actually.
Oh, cool.
We're going to be doing a walk around our complex and whatnot, kind of just an awareness of it, and they've done Light the Fight, and they've had, like, speakers and stuff, so
Very cool.
It's really cool. I like that people are reaching out, but yeah, so I'll kind of get into my story. And kind of just start from the beginning. I guess I don't have to get into everything as a child, but I think I was pretty normal as a kid. Whatever normal can be.
Normal is not a word that anyone would use to describe you.
We've had that discussion many times.
I was just going to say, we both like kind of shook our heads. I shrugged like, I guess.
I have told Bill, if we were to ask 100 people adjectives that describe him, not one person would say normal.
I think that's wrong. I think at least 50% would.
You guys can all comment. Tell me what you think. What would be the adjectives you would describe, though?
Pretty normal.
Maybe we should do a poll on Twitter.
Pretty normal. But so I've talked a lot about my depression. And I've always tried to be very open with people about it. But and I'll even get into a little bit with, you know, those first couple years, when Wild Bill kind of was just taking off, you know, most people know that I had a heart problem and I was in the hospital for a little bit. In fact, some people think I died and stayed dead.
Yep. I was going to mention that.
Yeah, we were at her friend's party. Actually, my friend's now too. And her friend's now fiance asked, "Wait, I thought you were dead," to her while I was out of the room.
Yeah, Bill was in the other room and said, "I'm going to be completely honest. I thought he died."
So wow. I know that, you know, there's been, you know, people know about my stuff, but I'll get a little deeper into that. So what had happened is I had gotten sick, and I'm not sure exactly what happened, but I got sick. There's speculations on how it happened. One of them is I spray painted my body for a Kung Fu Panda outfit. All the toxins went in, got sealed off with the spray paint, couldn't come out. And yes, it was regular spray paint, very toxic, not any like...
Some Rust-Oleum.
Yeah, not anything good. So I ended up stroking in my eye because of that. And then they think it just started getting worse and worse and worse.
That's how committed he was to being Wild Bill.
Actually... That's just how committed I am to being awesome. So,
not normal.
That was not a Wild Bill costume. It was actually just a regular Halloween costume.
Oh, that's right.
I did not know that.
And I walked up to the Howl. I walked up to the Howl and got really sick. And I was there for about 10 minutes before I went home and puked and got sick. And my roommate, Naki, for the next 3 days, had poured turpentine on my body and used steel wool to get the spray paint off.
Holy cow.
So, needless to say, bad decision, but also don't think I'd take it back because it was an awesome costume.
Maybe you would have just done it with proper paint.
Yeah, there you go. How about
that? Okay, sure, we'll say that. So I got sick. I ended up having an enlarged heart. In each ventricle of my heart, I had golf ball-sized blood clots, just a little bit bigger than golf balls. And then in my lungs, I had multiple pulmonary embolisms, blood clots in my lungs. They said, you know, there's 50 to 100. There's lots of them in there. And they also said that, like, one of those pulmonary embolisms would kill somebody, can kill somebody. And those are giant-sized blood clots that were in my lungs. Or in my heart, sorry. So it was pretty serious, and my heart function was really low. So I was in the hospital for about a month. Mm-hmm. During that time, I ended up dying in the hospital, and I came back to life. Quick little funny story about that is when they came back to life, the first thing I said was, "There better not be any BYU fans in here, or I would rather die."
But who saved your life, hon?
Yeah, the lady doing chest compressions.
Yeah.
BYU grad.
So they're good for something.
But anyway.
I love it.
So that's just kind of the start of it, right? And I had, I got out of it. I came back to life. I got healthy again. But I got feeling pretty bad about myself. Suffered some PTSD, and I felt in a room crowd full of people, I felt like the loneliest person.
Mm-hmm.
One time at the Nevada game, I was pretty sure I did the Mrs. Potts outfit, the teapot mm-hmm. from Beauty and the Beast.
Yep.
I only got up one time at that game. Went all over the internet, but I was only up once. Most of them I got up multiple times.
Right.
The reason I was only up once was because I wasn't feeling good, so I went in the back. And with the trainers, I was passing out, stuff like that, so I got back in there. And Linda Zimmerman, who mm-hmm. was, she had just finished up being the cheerleader coach, mm-hmm. and she was now in charge of
student involvement. Mm-hmm.
She went back with me, and the trainers were working on me, and she told them, she's like, I think this runs deeper than just his heart issues. And they're like, why? What's going on? She's like, he's pretty depressed. And I don't think he really wants to be around right now. And I was like, yeah, that's true. And the trainers had said, man, if you walk out there right now, you're going to have an entire stadium chant your name. Everybody loves you here. Everybody's going to cheer for you and chant for you. Why do you feel that way? Like, I don't know. I felt horrible. Like, I didn't feel good. Like, I could walk into that room, the Spectrum. I guess it's more in a room, but I could walk in there. And not that I'm sure there's not everybody loving me in there, but, you know, most people.
Yeah, the vast majority.
We're going to chant my name.
Yeah.
And yet I felt lonely and sad and depressed.
Well, on that note of being well-liked and popular, and in your case, like literally famous, I actually saw this on the internet the other day and it kind of stuck with me. And it was a picture that had a whole bunch of celebrities' faces on it. And it just said, this is what depression looks like. And they were all smiling in their pictures. Some of them were comedians like Robin Williams, Chris Farley, people like that, that I really looked up to growing up, you know. And it does, like Linda's point of it running deeper. The scary thing is it's deep in a sense that it's hidden. Like, you really, none of us would have known that. Linda did because she was close to the situation. Plus, you know, you had some health issues in the past, so people were keeping a close eye on you anyway. But
yeah, it sucked because she could look me in the face and know right away if I wasn't feeling good or if I was sad or things.
Yeah.
And like, I like to hide stuff from people.
Yeah.
But
we
I couldn't hide it from Linda.
Right. And Linda's, she's like the mom of the university.
Yeah, she's awesome. No, but we do. We don't want to broadcast our life.
Right.
You know, I mean, I guess social media, everybody does, but.
Yeah, but they're not, most of them aren't broadcasting the depressing hard days, you know. Some do, but the vast majority are not doing that.
I will say too, I've had a few friends that will say, you know, most people on Instagram or Facebook, they're posting all the happy things. And so I like when they, every once in a while, it's not a lot because you don't want to remember all the sad times. But if they're throwing out every once in a while, this is really also what's going on.
Yeah.
And I had a friend recently who, you know, like wrote a long post of how for her, she needed medication. And it's someone I knew from high school that was probably one of the happiest people and like genuinely cared about all these other people. But for her, she said, this is what's helping me. And it might help other people. And this is what my life is. And then, you know, a day later she said, I'm back to the happy post. Cause she uses it for her, like, her scrapbooking or chat books or different things. But I always appreciate when people do throw in those real posts every once in a while. Yeah.
And before we get back to your story, I want to say too, some of the bouts I've kind of had with depression and anxiety, some of the worst times were when I look back now, some of the happiest times in my life too, not because of what I was going through, but because I had stuff going on. I was in college for a lot of it. Just so much going on, and I enjoyed who I was with and what I was doing and all of that. And then I'd get home at night and yep. some like one thought would creep in, and then it's just this whole snowball effect. But those were some of the better moments of my life, and yeah, I was struggling with that more than I do now.
Yeah.
And I feel like my life is great now, but I also, like, looking back, they're not terrible memories, but again, we're trying to remember the good. Like, psychologically, we try to do that anyway.
Yeah.
So maybe it is easier for me to say that now in hindsight, but looking back, like, I was enjoying life, like,
yeah.
really a lot. And yeah, I still would come home at night and feel very lonely and very much like I couldn't even get out of bed.
And that's the thing too. Like, if you looked at my life at that time, you know, who wouldn't want to have gone to ESPNU? Who wouldn't want to have been on a TV show with Travis Pastrana?
Yeah.
You know, who didn't want to travel the nation doing what I was doing?
Yeah.
You know, I was filming a TV show. I was going all over. Who wouldn't want to do that? And why wouldn't it make you happy? And yet I was as lonely as I could have ever been.
Yeah. Yep. I feel like, I don't know, that's one of the first things that you talk to me about, of being Wild Bill and kind of why you had to take a step back. And as happy as it was, and you talk about all these great memories, and it's not that you look back on it and it's not a good thing, but it was also some of the loneliest times, and you had to get healthy.
Yeah. You know, and not even just with my heart, but my head.
Yeah.
And so what, one time, so it kind of all was coming to a head. It was during basketball season, kind of the tail end of it. And I was, my roommate, he had just moved out, but we were still really close. We were supposed to go to lunch or something together one Sunday. And I texted him and I said, "Nah, dude, I'm just not feeling it today." And he's like, "All right, no problem." I go, "Okay, cool." And I had decided that I was done. I decided that I wasn't going to be able to please people anymore. I knew that I wasn't going to be able to make people happy with every costume. I knew that, also from dying earlier, I knew, and I use the word know is because, like, in my head, these were things I knew.
Right.
Obviously I don't believe them now, but I knew that I, at the time that I did, I should not have made it out. I should have stayed dead. I knew that I was just kind of drain on everybody around me. And, so I decided to end it. And so my roommate wasn't going to come over. So I sat down and wrote, a note. And I had my gun out, and, I was just deciding, where should I do this? And I just sealed up my note. I had put it in my envelope and sealed it up. And then I got a text from my buddy. And he said, "Hey, man, I don't know what's going on, but I'm not feeling super good about the text." And, like, really, it was just like a quick text. I said, "Hey, I'm not really feeling lunch, let's not do it." So it wasn't anything alarming, but he's like, "Hey, I don't know what's going on, but I'm not feeling good about that. So I'm actually out front and I'm going to come inside. So here I come." So I hurried and kind of just put my gun in the room, and I put my note in my pocket. And at that time, I knew I wasn't going to do it right away because he was going to be there. And so he came inside. I told him to sit down. I ran outside and burned the note. And I knew I could make another note, but mm-hmm. I didn't want it to be found. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And, so he came in and we chatted, and we ended up going to dinner, and I told him what he'd stopped by coming over. And we both had a good cry, and he's like, "Man, what's going on?" And I said, "I don't know, but I just don't feel like I should be alive. Like, I don't feel happy, and I feel like I'm a drain on everybody around me." And to his credit, he didn't say, "Well, dude, everybody loves you. Look at all, because that's an easy answer, right? Like,
yeah.
hey, everybody was cheering for me. Yeah, but in my head, it wasn't me they were cheering for. They were cheering for Wild Bill.
Right.
And, so it was a really rough time. And I ended up getting into some therapy and chatting with some people. But,
Well, let me ask about that. So, because that's the story, right? Like, everyone tells their story with depression. They went and got help. But talk to us about, like, going to get help, because that's, like, the hardest part. Because if that's the one thing that everyone would do earlier in this process, they may be able to find a way out. So, like, what did somebody drag you there? Like, what happened? Okay, so, yeah, talk to us about, like, what's next? Like, how do you go from dinner with your buddy crying about it to actually trying to fix it?
So two important people in my life at that time, Linda Zimmerman and Dr. Jim Davis. He was the student health and wellness director. Mm. Unfortunately, he had a stroke not too long ago and is unable to be a doctor anymore. But great man. They both noticed things were going up. So at two different times, they had me see different therapists. And I don't know why I did it, but it was good for me at the time.
Why you did what?
Therapy.
Okay.
Because
right.
In my family, it really wasn't something that we did.
Do you feel I like they had to talk you into it, or did you go pretty willingly?
With Linda, I kind of made her talk me into it, but I was at the point where I needed something, and it was almost kind of a welcome something. But I mean,
yeah.
And I'm not going to tell you I was nice and just super talkative to that therapist right off either.
I'm sure you were.
We know you well enough, dude.
Like it still took a minute for me to warm up, knowing that I needed this, knowing that I needed to talk to somebody, knowing that I had him right in front of me.
Yep.
Still took me a minute.
For sure.
And by a minute, I mean a few sessions.
But that's the... In my mind, I don't know, because I didn't get treated like that. I did see somebody, but it wasn't as formal, like somebody taking me. It was more like me trying to get like my head straight. And,
yeah. But if you are a student on campus.
Yeah, this is important.
They have resources for you. There are, and I'm not sure if it's still free or if it's just super cheap. Or whatever, but I'm pretty sure you can. They have free counseling.
Yeah, I think it's still free. I don't know though. That's a good point.
But
it was when we were there.
Reach out to the wellness center. Mm-hmm. Reach out to the counseling department. That's where I went the first time, and they will take care of you.
There's also a lot of employers that now offer free counseling as well.
Yep, so my company does.
Yeah,
my school district does.
Yep.
And so it's something that a lot of employers offer too.
Yeah, and I think it's a common and important enough topic in today's world that there are resources really close to home and really close to work.
And I know most even religious places have it. I know, you know, obviously the
LDS community has resources.
There are resources. I know a lot of Christian-based places do. So find somebody.
Yep, absolutely.
And, you know, I wish that was the end of my story. I wish it was like, hey, you know, I got good and there it was. But I still struggled with depression. I mean, I still do, but nothing like I used to.
Yeah.
But I was still struggling with it. I ended the Wild Bill thing and just started working. And
did you feel like that helped?
Was that
more of just like you grew out of it? Like, what do you think?
Well, every game I would freak out.
Right.
Have I told this on the podcast?
A little bit in the first episode. We didn't dive into it much, though.
So I would literally cry and scream and yell.
I remember you telling me.
Pre-game, mid-game, because I'd always walk during the halftime. I'd walk into the cheer locker room.
To go get your stuff.
I'd get stuff switched. I would cry. I would scream and I would yell. And I would say words like, you're an idiot, people hate you, you're ugly, you're fat, don't you dare do this. and I would yell and scream things at myself. And
just like in a full panic attack?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and tell myself to F off. And
yeah.
I don't know why.
It just seems like you got to do it. I mean, yeah. I've had panic attacks, and the things you'll say and do and go through to yourself is unbelievable, because you don't see... I don't know. It's almost an out-of-body experience. It really sounds kind of dorky, but it's really aggressive.
It's so weird. But yeah, it was... I remember... Which costume was it? It was a costume that wasn't really, as known as some of the other ones. But I remember getting up and doing this costume, fully knowing everybody in there was going to boo me. I knew... 100% that as soon as I stood up, people were gonna.
Why were you gonna wear a?
It was just not a gonna
royal
be,
blue shirt with a Y on it.
Never. It just was not gonna be. I knew that people weren't gonna like it.
Yeah.
They were just not gonna like my costume.
This is what you're telling yourself the whole time.
And they cheered for me and made me feel good, and then after the game, I'd go home and I'd freak out and cry again.
Yeah.
And then I'd hang out with my buddies. and then the first year of dressing up, I used a lot of alcohol as a coping mechanism, which doesn't work.
Not a good idea.
It definitely band-aids things. It's
in
putting
the moment.
It puts a band-aid on the huge gash.
Yep.
And it's I have no problem with people drinking alcohol. I don't think it's wise when you're suffering.
Agreed. 100%.
Whether it's a full-blown mental illness or if it's just you're not in the right state of mind, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Like, alcohol is one of those things that you can have just to kind of take the edge off.
Yeah.
It's not going to fix anything.
Never.
And so I wouldn't suggest, especially if you're feeling depressed and sad.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think... something too that I kind of wanted to bring up is hearing like some of the anxiety and panic attack similarities between you and I. That's like, that's just one face of depression. That's what I've learned as I kind of went through this and met other people. When I would tell them, oh, sorry, I have anxiety. I get like, people don't understand. Like when I tell them at times, until recently, the past 18 months has been life changing in a lot of ways, but I get really bad claustrophobia, or I don't know if it's agoraphobia or claustrophobia. I've tried to define it myself without going and seeing someone about it. But in cars and in traffic and things like that, I get to the point where I feel like I have to get out of the car in the middle of I-15 and run to wherever we're going to go because it's a better option than sitting in the car. Like, that doesn't make any sense. But in understanding that and talking to people out loud about it, I immediately like feel that panic attack go away. And then all of a sudden I'm like, they'll share something with me like, oh yeah, I suffer from some depression or some kind of anxiety that sounds a lot like what you're dealing with. But it's not, I just don't want people to think that like you have these massive panic attacks where you're screaming at yourself in the locker room. That's what depression looks like. It's like, no, that's just one. That's Bill's. That's Bill's depression. Right?
That's what that part of my depression looks like.
Right. Yeah, that's the other thing is depending on the day and the time, it looks like something else.
Because moving forward, going a few years in, a few years, in advance there. So that was all 2009 through 11.
Mm-hmm.
Well... so I continue to deal with the depression and anxiety, and but my best bud, he did too. He had depression and anxiety as well. But he was my role dog. We always would hang out and seriously, just like one of my very best friends in the world. And one day we were hanging out and we had a really good day. We made some ribs. I did the ice bucket challenge. He filmed it. We went and did some hot tubbing. I actually decided to spend the night at his house that night. And, so I was at his house and then, woke up early in the morning because he just kind of slept in a lot. He actually had really bad back pain And at this time in his life, he was going through, he hated the meds he was on. So he was getting off of them. Right. And, so he'd gone cold turkey and so what had happened that night is he took just a normal dose of his meds. So I left early in the morning down to my sister's and, but we had stuff to do in the morning. And so I called him or I sent him a text and said, hey, when you get up, let me know. I'll come back and we can go do, cause we were going to make more ribs, make some peaches. And we had a few other things on our list. We were really excited for the day.
Mm-hmm.
And I get a call back immediately. And his dad is screaming. I can hear it still. It just gives me chills. I said, what's going on? He goes, James is dead. And I didn't quite understand him because he was screaming it. I said, what? He's like, he's dead. He's dead. And I said, hold on, I'm coming right back. So I immediately headed back up and I got there. And, but the entire time in your head, you rationalize, okay, he thinks he's dead, but he's not dead. He's just kind of hanging out, right? Like,
right.
I'm going to go in, I'm going to wake him up. And I walk into the house, I get to the top of the stairs to walk down, and I see his brother at the bottom of the stairs. And I just remember screaming, oh shit, this is real. And the brother looked at me, he's like, yeah. And so I ran downstairs, and he was just there, crumpled up. You know, he'd been working on something throughout the night, and had kind of just slumped over, and those meds kind of kicked in, stopped his heart a little too slow, and he ended up, he ended up dying. And some of the hardest part for me of it was in the middle of the night, I woke up and I went to the bathroom. I think it was like 1 o'clock. And so I went to the bathroom in the middle of the night. And his light was on, his door was open, which was kind of odd. He never had his light on and door open in the middle of the night like that. I was like, whatever. And I went right back to sleep. Well, that's right in the middle of the time where the coroner put his time of death. And, you know, people say, well, you can't blame yourself. You know, you can't. But still to this day. It's easy to laugh. It's better than crying, right?
No.
Man. To this day, it's hard for me. Even just driving today, I was just, what the hell was I thinking? Why didn't I go in there? I regret it every second. I regret it every day that I didn't go in there. And I blame myself, you know, I really do. For a while, I didn't like sleeping after he died. For months after, I'd have a dream every night that he would come to me. He's like, why didn't you come in there? This is your fault. You could have saved me. This is your fault. Why didn't you save me? It was pretty horrible. It was hard to sleep. It was hard to function. But I mean, not completely out of the woods. I still have dreams like that. Cammy's been witness to some stuff, huh, babe?
Yep. Sleep talking, sleepwalking.
Yeah.
Especially around anniversaries of birthdays or death days. And
which, in fact, was August 20th was the day that he died. We just reached his 5-year. And his birthday's coming up this month. And so it's pretty rough. You know, I had a really, really hard time. And, you know, the dreams were horrible. And then I had one dream that kind of ended him for a while. And he was, I was hanging out. We were all hanging out. And then he walked out of the room and I followed a little shortly behind him. And then next thing I know, he was laying face down in a swimming pool. So I jumped in, pulled him out, screamed for help. I did CPR, brought him back to life. And when I brought him back to life, he started screaming at me. He's like, "What is your problem?" I was like, "Dude, are you kidding me? I brought you back. That's what we wanted. Like, we want to be together. We want to hang out. We don't want you dead." And he's like, "You have got to let me be dead. You got to let me go. I'm dead. Let me be dead. I'm there. You're here." And so I was just like, "Oh, that's rough. It's really hard." And so I just had to, you know, but it ended the bad dreams for a while. I mean, I still have them sometimes. I mean, I, like Cammy said, I get them when there's, you know, anniversaries coming up. And in fact, I had one not too long ago where he was trying to kill me. It's, you know, I don't know what my head does, but it right. just makes me.
You don't get to control that necessarily.
Yeah. But it was a really hard time. And I became, during that time again, I didn't want to live. In fact, after he died, that took about 3 months to just kind of cruise. Did some hitchhiking. People are like, "Oh, aren't you nervous?" I'm like, "Well, yeah, in my head, if I got murdered, that's kind of what my goal is. Like, then I don't have to do it myself." And it was just really hard. I was so sad that he was gone. And I put so much blame on myself that I just couldn't hardly function. And, yeah. So when we, I don't know, when I, gosh, there's just certain words I don't want to say, 'cause I'm just going to bawl. yeah, I hope you guys don't take this as, I don't know. I still have my Coke man, 'cause obviously laughing is one of them.
Yeah.
You know, you know, and it's hard to tell somebody how to grieve. It's hard to tell somebody how to cope with it. But, you know, I'm not trying to laugh, but that's it's just easier than crying. Gosh, it just hurts. I'm just in my, son of it. Just a lot of emotion, you know. We just came up on his anniversary of his death, and his birthday's coming up, and the pain is just so much still there. I no longer wanted to be dead. In fact, I had a friend, you know, I was at her house during one of my visits in, and she knew that I was, you know, pretty much suicidal. And I don't know the proper term, if it is suicidal or if I really was, but like, I wanted to be dead, and I was okay with taking my own life. But I remember telling her, you know, she's like, "Well, why?" I'm like, "I don't know. I don't want to be here." And she's like, "Okay, well, do me a favor. Before you end it, find a different version of your life. Find something different. If this version of your life is making you unhappy, find a different version of your life. And then use that version of your life to make you happy. And if you need to find another one, use another one. But don't give up yet. Let's just find a different version of your life." So I was telling you, I did a podcast with a friend before about this stuff, and I actually reached out to her after, because I told that story and I said, "Hey, I just wanted to let you know that really did help me. That advice you gave me really helped me." And then and I told her, you know, I had just done an episode of a podcast with his friend's podcast, and you know, it was pretty cool. And she's like, "Well, actually, I want to tell you where I got that advice." I said, "Okay." She's like, and my buddy that passed away, his name was James. She said that last night that we hung out, the night before he died, I told him I was very scared because she was just starting her doctorate at Utah State. And she didn't, you know, she was really scared about a whole bunch of different things coming up. And he said, find a different version of you that's happy for this and excited, and make this different version of you and have this version of you be happy. And then find a different version of you and try and live that life first before you get too nervous. And she told me, so it's kind of like James gave you that advice. And so I was like, oh man, that's that's kind of cool. Yeah. You know, that my buddy, even from the grave, was reaching back at me.
Absolutely.
But, so one night, it was about a month or two after he died, and I had finally just decided, you know, nobody's going to kill me. I'm just too big for these people that are picking me up hitchhiking to try to off me.
To one way to look at it, you know.
Yeah. Anyway, I had a really horrible night, and it was about 1 o'clock in the morning, midnight ish. And I had a bottle of liquor and I had a gun, and I was like, well, do I finish this bottle or I hadn't even broken the bottle yet. Do I drink this and then shoot myself, or do I shoot myself first? Like, what do I do here? And I was kind of debating. And I was just so unhappy, and I just did not want to be around anymore. And again, I felt very alone. Because right when somebody dies, everybody's like, oh man, if you need anything, let me know. And well, I'd come every, sometimes when I come back in, I still felt so lonely. And then I'd see everything that me and him would do together. And I was sitting there about 1 o'clock in the morning, and all of a sudden, you know, I'm making this decision. I get a text, and it's my friend's wife. And she's like, hey, Bill, we're thinking about you. We haven't seen you for a while. We really would like to see you. We really love you. I just want you to know we love you, and we'd like to see you soon. And then that just broke me down into tears. You know, just broke me down and made me cry. I was like, gosh, dang it. What's my problem? Yeah. And you know, sad to say, I never did go get help again on that. During that time, I probably should have went and seen somebody, but it was a very hard time, and it affected me pretty bad, because he was, you know, one of my very best friends in the world. We hung out all the time, and again, it was my, okay, not my fault, but I felt like it was my fault. And looking back, you know, either of those times, had I ended it, this version of me currently wouldn't exist. I wouldn't have my beautiful wife, my rock. I wouldn't do this podcast.
That's true.
Aggie Nation would miss out on such great content.
True.
You know, there's just so much to miss out on. And I think that's, you know, such a sad thing about choosing to end your own life. That it, you know, sometimes you're not going to see the light at the end of the tunnel. I was up at a friend's cabin about a year before my buddy died, and I was chatting with my friend's dad, and he said, you know, I think the problem that with suicide is people just don't see hope left, and it's like the sun is set and they don't see the sunrise coming. Which, you know, I've actually held to very, the thing is with me, sunrises are some of my very favorite thing in the world. And, because everybody sees a sunset, just about everybody gets to see a sunset because everybody's awake for a sunset. Sunrises are special because sometimes I think they're more pretty, but not everybody gets to see them. You have to have a purpose to see sunset. You're up early for work. You're up to see the sunset.
Sunrise.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Sunrise. Yeah. Thanks, love. But there's a reason you're seeing that sunrise.
Yeah.
And so when he told me that, I was like, oh, that's really cool. And so I've always kind of held on to that. And even back in my head,
like that.
I want to make sure I still have hope for that sunrise, even in these dark times.
I like that.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. It's a pretty cool thing. I wish I could claim it as mine.
Yeah.
I think something else that needs to be like emphasized too is both the times that you had really considered taking your life, it was because a friend reached out that you didn't. And so there are times when you individually might not have hope, but you can be a hope for someone else. And you can be that sunrise or that little light.
Yeah.
And
yep.
Something that was also talked about on the last podcast you did was just, you know, if you have that thought to reach out to someone, or you know, someone just crosses your mind, like you're never going to regret reaching out to them. And so.
Unless it's me, because I might chew your ear off and just talk.
Dude, they love listening to you talk, so you're fine. But it's funny that you say that, because I remember distinctly in college when I was in some of my darkest times, and even when I moved to Salt Lake from Logan, I had really bad, like that was probably my worst year and a half, because I didn't know if I for sure wanted to be in Salt Lake, and I had just left Logan and I was coaching the Utah State baseball team, and like all these things were happening, and I was really struggling with my weight worse than I ever have. And anytime those thoughts came in, obviously I'd think a lot about my dad who passed away when I was 18, and kind of try to be like, okay, if I could have a conversation with him, like he would not want me to be thinking this way. And I just like, what would he do? Right. And I would send a text to somebody just to be like, hey, I was just thinking about you and like, hope everything's good. We should hang out soon. Super casual. But because of that, I felt like it was like pulling me out, because they didn't know I was reaching out to them. And I was, and I wish I could remember who I texted at those times, because like, sorry, I'm getting emotional now too, but
stop crying.
Because those people have no idea that I was reaching out to them.
Yeah.
Pretending almost like I was trying to be a rock for them. And in that way we were for each other.
Yeah.
And it's funny that you say like, you could be that sunrise for somebody that may not feel like they'll ever see it again. And that's really powerful. And like, it's something I'm glad you brought it up, because like, it should never be overlooked at how simple that action is and how powerful it can be. Cause that's kind of part of my story, is some of those darkest times I'd just send a text to two or three people that I'm like, man, I haven't talked to them in a while. I should just say hi and see if they want to grab lunch when I'm in Logan again or whatever. And it was just super therapeutic. And looking back now, it was definitely something that pulled me out of those really dark and really funky times where I was like, man, I don't know what I'm doing anymore. Like, I feel like I'm just spinning my wheels, you know? And part of the problem for me, and part of what I kept thinking like I'm a loser about, and like kind of beating myself up over, was like my age of like finally leaving Logan and finishing school, which I still haven't done, but I have a different perspective on it now. But like, those were all things that I was really hard on myself about, because I didn't start school till I was 24, almost 25.
Me too.
Yeah. And it was just one of those things, I couldn't afford it. Like, it's just not something I did. And so because of all of those things, I feel like I allowed them to snowball, because it's what people in society like expected of me, but nobody was there expecting it of me. My mom wasn't harping on me about these things. My brothers and sister weren't concerned with it. They felt like I had my life together, but I didn't. Right. And so it was like, I feel like part of what's helped a lot too is meditation and being able to do exercises. Like, okay, what do I want to get out of today? Like, what am I going to do with my 24 hours? Right.
Mm-hmm. Find a purpose.
Yeah, exactly. And what you mentioned, Bill, about that you have to have a purpose to wake up in the morning to see the sunrise. My dad always told us like, everything should have a purpose. Like, just give everything a purpose. And then when you do it, you get more out of it. Like, and that's just, I just thought of him when you said like your little saying that you coined, we'll say, right?
Yeah, me.
Just kidding.
It was all me.
Yeah, but that helped so much in those times where I, you know, gave purpose to a text that was supposed to be for somebody else, but it was 100% for me.
Well, and there's times where I literally couldn't get out of bed.
Oh, for me my too.
Depression. Like, I'd hear people talk about that, and I'm like, mm-hmm. What do you mean? You can't get out of bed. And anybody can get out of bed. But the times where you cannot find the motivation, and then, you know, and it almost scared me to get out of bed because I didn't know where I would go. What would I would do if I got out of bed? And the problem was I knew, for me, the best way to beat it was to work and to stay busy.
Me too.
But when I was in such a depressed state, I couldn't get up and get busy and go to work. The way I knew how to fix it, I couldn't do it.
Yep.
It was just so, such a rough go, you know? So
absolutely.
One other thing, it just brought something to mind. Like when I was in college, I had a roommate, someone that I've been friends with my entire life. We call each other womb mates because our moms were pregnant with us at the same time.
I like it.
Yeah.
From womb mates to roommates is what we say. But her whole family suffers from depression, and she'd get it really bad in the winter seasonally. She's from warmer climate, and so it was really hard for her. And there were times where she would spend the entire day in bed. And we were roommates in college, and I just feel like I should say this too, because I think a lot of times college students, you're living in the same place with someone, and if you're noticing something, like, you have to do it in an appropriate way.
Right.
But like, help those roommates of yours. There were times where I thought I was just being a really annoying roommate, and I'd make her get out of bed. We shared a room. I'd turn on the light, and I'd make her get out of bed, and I'd make her eat, like, breakfast. I'd come home from class, and she still hadn't gotten out of bed. I'd make her eat something. And I just, like, I would, you know, I thought I was just being annoying and just saying, like,
right,
you haven't eaten anything. You should probably eat something, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And years later, she came to me and said, like, you kept me alive that semester. And so you don't know how much you can help someone.
Yeah.
No, you never do. Because as much as you kept her alive, like, there's been people in my life that have steered me away before it even got bad.
Yeah.
Just because of simple things. And, you know, and honestly, like, people reaching out and saying hey or what, you know.
Yeah.
Good. That's one thing I've loved about this podcast is, like, you know, telling jokes that we're just talking to my old buddies.
No, I don't. No, I
you
don't.
Have. We. I can listen to the episodes.
I know, but
it's kind of true.
But
some of them.
But it is, like, even if, you know, they're not an old buddy, I'll become buddies with them real quick.
Yeah.
This has been so good for me and my soul, just to, like, have good times to talk about with people, and tell everybody's story. That it's helped me. It's given me a good fresh, you know,
fresh purpose.
And, yeah. And I've loved it. Like,
I'm with
this
you,
podcast man. Has kind of been a selfish thing for me. It's been really fun for me. I'm glad you're listening.
Right. Yeah.
But it's been so good for me to keep me up and going. And, you know, again, I the love what we get for it, but really it's just like, you know, we'll have Josh Flores. We've already had Josh Flores in studio.
Yep.
His episode will release in a couple weeks.
A couple weeks,
yeah. But just having him in, just a good friend, just like, oh, man, like, this is so fun to have these people in here and, mm-hmm. and just chat with them.
Absolutely. It's been awesome.
But, you know, I've told a couple different stories about my life tonight. You know, there's a lot more out there for my life. There's a lot more out there from everybody.
Mm-hmm.
My wife, when we were talking before, you know, tonight before we started recording, she said, you know, it's just crazy to think that the times you were feeling the loneliest is when people were loving you. Or what did you say, babe?
I'm trying to remember how I worded it now. It was so profound then.
A lot more eloquent than how I had it just then. But
just basically, just the times you felt the loneliest was also when you had the most people in your life. Yeah. That you would think.
You wouldn't feel that.
Right.
Yeah. And so, you know, reaching out, saying you love you to somebody that you think has it all or knows, you know, can have whatever they want. Like,
yeah, if you think that they're getting 15 texts or 100 texts a night from people just letting them know they love them, they're probably not. So you're welcome to do that to someone. Like, Bill was one of the most recognized faces in Cache Valley at that time.
Right.
And yet he remembers moments in texts that happened at really important times to him.
Yeah, and there's a lot more than just those two that I said.
Yeah, and that's what's crazy is, like, people feel like, I don't want to bother him or whatever. And it's like, bother him. Like you with your roommate. Because are you ever really bothered with a text? As long as it's not from an ex, I think we're pretty much okay, right? Like, go ahead and connect with people. And I think that that's what, to me, the moral of this is, like, the suicide prevention and the things that I've read about over the years as well with having some people that I know that... that took their own life and things like that, is that the moral is communication and connection with people and relationships. And that's one thing that Bill is good at, right? And I've been told I'm good at just, like, connecting with people in those relationships. And the times when I was the hardest to get through the day were the times that those relationships paid back. Without me asking them to, they reached out to me in those times. Yeah. And that's, like, that it's so important. And it's difficult because you're told, oh, you're happy, dude. Like, you're fine. And I remember distinctly when I had two really close friends show up to my apartment one day with cookies, like, saying, hey, we've noticed you haven't been yourself lately. And just to hear them say that, I broke down in tears. And they were like, what's happening right now? They didn't know what they walked into. But just, that's when I told them, like, you're right. And I didn't know anybody else could see it. I thought I was doing a good job of masking it. And I wasn't. Right. And that's how far I'd let, like, I say let, but I didn't know what else to do. But that's how far it was getting, that I was, like, I wasn't getting out of bed. I was missing class after class. Missing work because I was quote unquote sick, right?
Well, I mean, you are sick.
Yeah, you are. It's true. You know? You're absolutely right.
You don't want to look at it like that, but that's really and truly it's an illness, you know, and you might only have it for a minute. Because I think that my problem ever admitting to it was, you know, this mental illness is such a negative connotation to it that, you know, when you hear that, it's like, you know, like a cripple person, and you don't want to be a cripple person because you have this mental illness. Well, to me, it's like any other sickness. You can get over it temporarily. You know, you can be healthy and have bouts of it. At least in my life, maybe not. This isn't for everybody, but it's not 100%. Day in, day out, you know, you're going to have spots in the day where it's good and bad.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you might have days where it's great or days, you know, in a row where it's bad.
Right.
But, you know, it's hard. It's just a hard thing to go through. You know, like I say, I still deal with it. It's, it's nowhere near where it has been, but I mean, who's to say it's not going to rear its ugly head again for whatever reason. But, you know, and it, you know, I found that, you know, there's certain ways for me to deal with it. Honestly, like I said, my wife's my rock. It's just so much nicer to have somebody else that, you know, I told her pretty early on in our relationship too about all my problems.
Right.
Maybe a little too early.
I snagged her up though. So, but I wanted to be open and honest with her. Just like, listen, I have some problems. You know, and I'm not suggesting everybody has to do that, but that's how I handled it, and it worked out great for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think just kind of what we're saying is maybe you're wanting someone else to reach out to you, and it might not happen. And so I think you can take Kellen's example, and maybe you have to be the one to reach out, and it's going to come back. And even if you don't feel comfortable reaching out to people you know, that's what the hotline is for.
Yep.
And that's what hopefully they get, that 3-digit number that you can just dial.
Yep.
As simply as memorizing 911. And
yeah.
And so there's other people out there. If you don't want to talk to someone that you know, you don't feel comfortable with that, call a complete stranger.
Yeah.
For real.
And also, I want to say this too.
Call us.
Yeah.
For real.
Dude, yeah. Hit me up. Email us. We'll call you. We'll chat with you.
Mm-hmm.
But I do want to say this. Throughout all this, I think the person that blames themselves the most and has the hardest trouble with this is my mother. Because she's my mother, she should have seen something. She should have been there. If you are a parent of somebody who deals with this, a brother, a sister, whoever you are to somebody that has this, it's not your fault they have this. You don't necessarily should see this. Like, it's people can disguise it really well.
Yeah.
You know, there was very few people in my life that knew about this part mm-hmm. of my life. So don't blame yourself if you're, you know, if they finally come to you and say, hey, oh man, how did I not see that before? I don't know. It disguises itself really easy. You can hide it from people. But just know, you know, it's how you move on and go from there. You know, my mom is great. My mom's a great mother. You know, if you ever meet my mom, you'll be like, how is she such a nice lady and you are who you are?
Yeah, I think she wonders that too.
I know. But, you know, that's one thing. I wish my mom would have never blamed herself for any of that because it's nobody's fault. This isn't the fault of me, you know. This isn't the fault of her. You know, it's whatever. It just happens. And, you know, if anything, it's credit to her and my friends in my life and the people that have given me support, the reason I'm still here.
Yep.
And, you know, I don't want to, you know, just like this. We have a pretty happy podcast, pretty fun podcast.
Yes, we do.
But it was really important to me to take a minute. I know that, you know, the Wake Forest game hasn't happened for us yet.
Yeah, we're recording just 2 days before it.
But by the time this release, you know, we should have, you know, maybe released something about football because football's coming up. But I really wanted
to. We got football. Huh? We're doing football. It's fine. This is good.
Exactly. But I really wanted. This is something that's very important to me.
And with it being September, you know.
Yeah.
The month where I think it's like, let's kick off September with it because we'll probably be bringing it up more. I know we're going to be working on some more kind of episodes where we're going to focus on some fans and some of their stories and things like that as well. And I think that this is a good platform to kind of just at least acknowledge it and as an Aggie family kind of say, hey, like, let's make sure we're doing something.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, thanks to my wife and Kellen for helping me talk tonight and being there.
I'm glad we got to.
So the suicide prevention hotline, the one currently that's out there is 1-800-273-TALK. That is 1-800-273-8255. You know, if you or somebody you know needs it, just do it. And then also, Kellen mentioned it's kind of a wordy email address or
website.
It's suicidepreventionlifeline.org. Suicidepreventionlifeline.org. Please, you know, if you're struggling, reach out to somebody. Reach out to us, like Kellen said. We're happy to chat with you. If you know somebody that's struggling, you know, reach out to them. And if you don't know and you just feel like you want to reach out to somebody, reach out to them. You never know what people are going through. You know, that's the thing is like, you don't always wear your emotions on your sleeve. You might be miserable, but people have no idea. Also, I'm on the reverse a lot. Sometimes I'm really happy and content and people think I'm sad. Yeah, just have a pretty stoic face.
Yeah. Well, then I think we're all used to you with your shirt off when you look happy, you know, so maybe you're just the opposite of what you're actually feeling.
Yeah, that's probably it.
No, I appreciate you sharing it with us, because I think a lot of people that listen, listen because they obviously like the guests that we have. But I think this topic is important, and I'm glad we got a chance to talk about it. It obviously hits home for me. Having the conversation we got to have with Jalen, I thought was kind of important as well. We got good feedback on it, and this you've built this platform. Like, we've worked to produce this, and I think this is a great opportunity to share it. That's personally my feelings, and it's not easy to get on here as somebody that was a public figure that was dealing with all this and share such deep things. So for me, thank you for sharing it and making me feel like I wasn't crazy in college during about the same time feeling the same way to some degree. So yeah. Thank you.
Well, I think it's fine to be a little crazy, right?
Well, yeah.
Crazy is
no doubt
brings us great stories.
Yeah. Well, you are Wild Bill. Not crazy Bill, but wild.
Yeah, a little wild. Babe, you have anything you want to finish off with?
Nope. Thanks for having me.
Yep. Well, again, I want to thank you guys for taking the time to listen to this episode and all the love and support that I've been given from everybody. It's an important episode for me, so. Thanks again. Yeah, that's all I got for you.
Cool.
Every Aggie's a legend.
What's your story? We did it.
Yeah.